Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limarck Technical Net. Limarck Technical Net has been going strong for 40-odd years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all get together and discuss the hobby that we love so much and science and technology in general. And I welcome everyone who has come back this Sunday night to do it all over again. I hope you'll learn a few things and be somewhat entertained, and I hope that I learn a few things as well. So let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. Okay, if you want to reach me, and you can't do it by the radio, then email is the best route. That would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions, for people who can't get on to the technical net via the radio, where they can email me and we can treat it as though they asked the question on the air. Or if you have a topic that you would like to discuss or be part of a discussion or hear a discussion. Or if you have puzzles. I am always looking for interesting puzzles. They're very difficult to find. Usually I try and find things where a Google search will give people the wrong answer. But that's few and far between. Google's rather clever these days. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some video, YouTube, website related to space or NASA. So my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Of course, if you want to reach Paul directly, he's at spacenetreport@gmail.com. There's my link page. It has lots of interesting articles that I've combed through the past week. And take a look at them. You might find them of interest. We even have a little optical illusion article, which is great to read, but terrible to talk about on a radio. So the link page is roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available for anyone so inclined. To get there, you just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and it'll bring you to the chat room. We offer an audio stream on the Internet. If you have friends that are not around near the radio and have Internet access, just have them type into their browser technet.ac2gs.com. And you'll get the audio stream of the TechNet, and I try and keep it up 7/24, you know, throughout the week. Occasionally, we have to reboot the system, but for the most part, if you're interested in listening in to W2VL, that's the place to listen. And, of course, I want to mention MyKC2NJI, who has a great archive site called AmateurRadio.tv with over a million visitors. He has archives of our technical net going as far back as September 2006. So let me drop for a second and I'll tell you what my plans are for tonight. Okay, I don't have anything particularly special planned. We'll ask for questions. Hopefully we'll get a little bit more response than the last few weeks. We're kind of quiet. So I'd like at first, if possible, questions of amateur radio. And later on, as time permits, we can broaden the scope to any technology or science discussion that would interest you. This includes medicine as well, but I always forewarn people that we do not treat or diagnose over the radio, but a general conversation of medicine is an option. So hopefully, if the laws of physics maintain themselves and my shack works and the repeater works and the universe works, that's my plans until about 10:15, when Paul will come with the SpaceNet report. That should take us to 11 p.m., and I'll return to tie a bow on it and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. Now, if there's anyone out there who would like to get the ball rolling and has some questions or topics for discussion, please give me your first name and your call sign.
This is WB2KWC Ken with an amateur radio related question.
Okay, Ken, recognize anyone else out there. Also, if anyone wants to tell us how the Hamfest went, Limarck had a outdoors Hamfest, and I tell you, you picked a beautiful day for it. So If anyone wants to give a little short report of what was seen and done there, that's also a possible reason to sign up on the list. If anyone else want to put their name on the list, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu.
Okay, Rich recognized. Once again, anyone else out there want to put their name on the list?
Intuition, if you think applicable voltage dividers. I sent you on an example, the video of capacitive voltage divider, I would like to cover the subject for all voltage dividers. Intuition.
Okay, Wes, we'll put you on the list. Anyone else want to go on the list tonight? Please give me your first name and your call sign.
GCYMU, no question yet, but I'll try to think of something when the timing comes around. Oh, also, name is Gary.
Okay, Gary, I'll keep you in mind. You know, if a question comes up later on, I'm sure we'll have loads of free time, and I'll be asking people for questions later on, so just keep thinking, and I'm sure you'll come up with something interesting. Let's start with Ken tonight, WB2KWC. What's your question for tonight, Ken?
Okay, thank you, Roy. Something I am curious about. I use an antenna tuner to better match my transmitter to my antenna. And I was curious, does tuning the antenna tuner in any way affect my receive signal? Does tuning it allow me to receive better, or is it just to keep the transmitter from experiencing too high a standard wave ratio?
Okay, that's a good question. Dick used to mention regularly the reciprocity law. So a impedance transformed antenna allows you to transfer more energy and allows you to receive more energy coming in from a received signal. In point of fact, there are more than a few rigs where unfortunately they can't easily discern the standing wave ratio, and they simply do it by roughly approximating the background noise. When they've come close to a one-to-one visua, the signal and the noise goes up. So, yeah, by improving your match through your antenna tuner, you are also increasing the amount of received signal that gets to the front end of your receiver and improving your reception.
Okay, thank you. Glad I hit the little tune button on the Transmatch when listening.
Yeah, I mean, Dick used to mention that receiving is kind of a bulletproof phenomena, since receiver amplifiers are low noise and very high gain. Even if you have excessive loss because of mismatch, it's not a travesty. You could still get by. And receivers are very, very forgiving of connections. Although it improves your signal-to-noise ratio, nothing terrible happens. When you're transmitting signals out, though, terrible things can happen. You'll get reflections back from the mismatch that'll go right into your final transmitter's amplifier, and unless it has a protection circuit, that can lead to some damages. So you can, and people do it all the time, receive without bothering to tweak their settings. But if you want to squeeze that last bit of signal-to-noise ratio out and get a better signal, it's always a good practice to tune it up. Yes, Wesley.
Officer, can we tune the same exactly question to look a little different, but actually it's the same? what is the relation between SWR and the receive performance?
Well, as I mentioned before, if you have a impedance mismatch, you have reflections, and the more reflections, the more loss you have. So you would like, in a perfect universe, to transfer as much of the received signal from the antenna into the transmission line and into the front end of the radio. If you have an impedance mismatch, you will have reflections that will cause some of the signal to be reflected back, and due to the attenuation losses of our coax cable, a good percent of it will be turned into waste heat and not into into a signal that can be detected.
Yeah, I agree with it. So actually you said that an antenna analyzer or a transmitter shows that the antenna output present, it is what you have, and it is probably about as good as it gets. Enter Xia.
Yeah, Wesley, by the way, your microphone is doing that again, where it drops by about 10 or 12 decibels and then comes right back.
Okay, how it is now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, I hear you fine. It's a very rare thing, like I've mentioned before, in something like a 3 or 5 minute conversation, I'll maybe hear it once or twice. So it's not something that's consistent, but I'll tell you if it happens again later on.
I do.
Okay, you just did it again, by the way.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. How does it know?
At the end, it was fine. At the very beginning, it was doing that.
Okay, it might be a relay. Or maybe I'm keying too fast.
I don't know. It sort of sounds like it's a problem with the microphone. Some place where the wire should be conducting, it's kind of very iffy, and all of a sudden it kind of goes up in resistance and then comes back down and then up. So it kind of sounds like a mechanical problem with a wire in your microphone stage someplace.
I'm going to try to put the button and talk. I have a problem with the push to talk button.
Okay, it's happening again. You're getting a carrier, it's just not no audio. So I don't think it's the push to talk button. Again, I kind of tend to think that it's more that your audio signal is getting interrupted at some point before it reaches the modulator.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I agree with the microphone scenario, you know. Sounds like it's, you know, a bad connection inside the mic. It's maybe just, you know, maybe where the wires are going through the mic, but, you know, crackly, 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 and then you know, on and off, on and off. It really sounds like a mic problem. I that's my vote anyway. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, yeah, I would agree, Paul. You know, I mean, if you happen to have a spare microphone, that would kind of remove the microphone, the cable, and that half of the connector out of the equation. If it still happens, then it might be something inside the TS-2000.
Okay, I do thank you very much for your advice. And I'll take a look at it. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So, Rich, W2BZ, you have a question for tonight?
I do. I was wondering what makes, I was wondering why FM, the F frequency modulation mode, is particularly suited or is now suited more to UHF and PHF. Because when I was a kid, 2 meters was AM. And I wonder why it got switched over to being FM. And what about frequency modulation itself suits it to the higher frequencies?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I don't have any specific facts, but I can give you what my understanding is, and I can ask the people listening in to add their expertise. They have much more experience through the many years. I would imagine frequency modulation is a technology that slowly became more and more popularized, that it lends itself reasonably well to the UHF and VHF, especially the UHF band, because of its wide bandwidth, and so you don't have to be as stingy as we are for a single sideband transmissions down on the HF band. The beauty, of course, of frequency modulation is because it does not use amplitude as part of the modulation. Background noises, as long as you get to the capture level of the FM transmission, gives you a very nice, practically silent transmission, and high quality with a reasonable bandwidth. I mean, you wouldn't. It's not a very efficient way of getting your signal across. The bandwidth and energy requirements are not as efficient as single sideband. So for long distance transmissions, you wouldn't want to use frequency modulation. You know, you kind of want a very, very narrow slice of a bandwidth, audio that would be single sideband, or that's really the big feature of CW. You have such a short bandwidth that you can use all of your watts to punch through a much more narrower band, and you get a much more efficient signal. So I think it's a combination of a bunch of things, popularity, high fidelity, low noise, and the availability of wide bandwidth, and that most of your conversations will tend to be local. This is kind of reflected in the fact that more distant VHF transmissions still use single sideband.
Is that, you mean, direct, not going into a repeater, right? What sort of I'm looking for? You know, point-to-point communications, people are still using single sideband on VHF?
Yes, it's lower down in the frequency band, but and they use horizontal orientation antennas. Usually they'll use Yagis, and that's kind of meant for a more long-distance point-to-point type of communication, as opposed to people who get on 146.520 on FM and just chat locally, simplexing, or going through repeaters. But for distant use, and there still is, I know people actually do it, you would prefer to kind of use a horizontally oriented Yagi and point it in the direction of the more distant person you're trying to communicate, and you operate single sideband.
And as far as you know, AM isn't used anymore. Why would that be? Why would a single sideband on occasion be used on VHF where AM isn't, or maybe it is still also?
Yeah, AM is also used. I forget if it's Thursday night or Wednesday night, because they change it every so often. It's 7 o'clock. I think it's 145.00 is the Dinosaur Net. A couple of guys in Long Island go on and use AM. You're going to get more efficient use with single sideband because of the energy utilization. Single sideband you get something like four times the effective power because you know, half of an amplitude modulated signal is the unmodulated carrier wave. So a single sideband is another amplitude modulation method, but a much more efficient one, watt per watt.
So basically, overall, the overriding principle is selectivity first, where you say FM has, I guess, besides CW, FM has the narrowest bandwidth, and you can cram more signals in there per frequency. Is that what, is there any done on the low bands, do you know? You know, vice versa, or is it just that, you know, things are set the way they're set, and except for dinosaurs like myself, it's FM for VHF and UHF and SSB and AM for all the rest.
Yes, Wesley recognized. I'll get to you in a second, Wesley. The FM is a wide bandwidth. This is the point I was trying to make. Is that, relatively speaking, UHF and VHF have a much wider band. So there's a lot more places to spread out. This is why you get things like analog and digital television on UHF, because it requires something like 6 megahertz of bandwidth, but that's doable on the UHF band. So FM requires more bandwidth. So that's the reason why you're not going to probably see it on the HF band. You might see a little bit of it on 6 meters, but otherwise you won't. Again, because it takes up too much of bandwidth, and because it's not nearly as efficient as single sideband is. Some people prefer the amplitude modulation. They like the fidelity of the audio. They like the fact that since it has a built-in carrier frequency, you can't tune off frequency and hear squirrels chat or guys with profundo basso voices. So you do have AM available, usually more likely in the 40 to 80 meter and certainly 160 meter. But you're not going to see FM there, down there. Wesley, you wanted to say something?
FM that requires more bandwidth.
Okay. Rich, I didn't catch the first part.
Say that again?
Yeah, I just, well, that's what I asked you to say it again, because I didn't get the whole comment. I got the second half.
Oh, it was, what is it about FM that requires a larger bandwidth?
I mean, theoretically, you could have a much more narrower bandwidth at the cost of fidelity. It depends on what frequency range you want. You know, in the old days, there was the standard FM, you know, frequency, then there was narrow band. And now we have very narrow bands because they're trying to squeeze some more space into things like VHF. So if you want to pay the price of a much more narrow bandwidth transmission where you don't quite get the highs that we're used to on standard versions of FM, you could do it. You know, you go to a very narrow band and you'll be able to have a signal that's more narrow than the standard narrow band.
Okay, thanks, Sam. In commercial FM.
That's John KD2BD, who's in our chat room, has a comment. He says, FM doesn't work well on HF because of selective fading. AMPS adopted FM on VHF and UHF when commercial two-way FM equipment became available on the surplus market. One of the big advantages of FM over AM is that FM doesn't require a high-level modulator and can be amplified with a high-efficiency Class C final amplifier. That's a good point, John. Thank you. Because I mentioned when our repeater antenna was not working so well and I was using a linear amplifier to boost my signal, Someone asked me why I'm wasting my money on a linear amplifier when you don't really need a linear amplifier for transmitting FM signals. The answer being that, well, it's kind of, a lot of them are designed to operate both FM and single sideband, so they're supposedly linear. But anyway, Wesley, you wanted to make a comment.
Yeah. As far as amplifiers, 1 kilowatt amplifier can handle 400 watts on FM. So if you have a single sideband, 1 kilowatt, 400 watts FM. And we wonder why. So FM is a constant envelope modulation, meaning that the amplitude is constant. Am I coming good now, Dr. Roy?
Yes, you are. Yeah, you're talking also about full duty cycle.
That is correct. So in commercial radio, there was 25 kilohertz bandwidth for the FM. The wider it is, the more high fidelity of the sound do you have. You do have. Okay. In amateur radio, we have a 6 kilohertz. So, many times less. And then we compare it to... actually, I'm confused. I know that 2.4 is a single sideband. So the 2 times 2.4 plus carrier, it's 6. So I might be wrong in FM. How wide is FM in amateur radio?
I believe each channel is rated at 15 kilohertz.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. So, 6 kilohertz is AM, and 2.4 kilohertz is single sideband. So think about it this way. You have a 100 watts across the width of something. So let's say you have a power 100 kilograms in your hammer, and that is across the width of something. So millimeters, that would be more than a quarter of an inch. And you're trying to use 100 kilograms on it. And then you can have an impact on your hand, and you're going to feel it. But if you put the same power on the needle that is directed to the palm of your hand, that would be 2.4 kilohertz, let's say. It's going to go right across your hand from the other side of it. So the more narrow it is, the more power is concentrated on that bandwidth. So if somebody has a different opinion, I would appreciate if you comment on it. And to HGN.
Wes, I kind of mentioned that earlier. I didn't give the particular example that you chose. But if you're able to use the same power for a narrower bandwidth, what happens effectively is you got more signal in a smaller range of frequencies, and the background noise per kilohertz is the same. So if you shrink the bandwidth, you're shrinking the background noise, but you're sending the same amount of signal out, and so getting a signal out becomes increasingly more efficient for a given power as you narrow the bandwidth. And as I mentioned, that's a good reason why a lot of QRP people have settled on CW. CW will get heard the farthest because the bandwidth is much, much, much more narrower than even the most narrow single sideband signal. So I agree with you. Wouldn't quite use the example, but effectively you are lessening the background noise by narrowing the frequency range.
Yeah, who from you guys remember what is the width of unmodulated carrier? I believe it's 400 or 600 kilohertz. So we have a single sideband, we have a left single band, and we have a right one, LNB and UNB, right, and then we have a carrier in the middle, which is then cut in a single sideband to 3% of it. So then the rest of it is just rest of the power that is usually occupied by the carrier is directed to that remaining single sideband. But what is the width of the carrier? Is it 600 hertz and kilohertz and 2xg? No, it's hertz, not kilohertz, hertz.
By the way, okay, EchoLink went in and out again. So welcome back, people on EchoLink. One of these days we'll figure out what's going on there, EchoLink. The carrier doesn't send any information at all. The carrier is simply a point frequency on the carrier frequency itself. It doesn't have a bandwidth. The bandwidth of amplitude modulation is sort of the same as the two sidebands. You could theoretically slice off the carrier and have the upper and lower sideband, and you would save 50% of the power. But have the same bandwidth. So then you want to slice off one of the bands, the upper sideband or the lower sideband. So approximately each sideband is a little bit less than about 3,000 hertz, and the total width of amplitude modulation is about 6 kilohertz.
I have a problem with that. But it would be good if some other guys say something. Either my knowledge is rusted. You have unmodulated carrier. You are able to pick up that carrier using BFO. So the old receivers, and then the Japanese made something like a portable receiver, and we used that was using BFO. And we are able to catch that unmodulated carrier and bring it to our speaker. It has a width. It's a piece of information. It is, we cannot hear it, but we can detect it and we can discrumble it. It must have a width. Dr. Roy.
It's my understanding that it has a nominal width. What you're simply hearing is the difference between the transmission and whatever frequency that you've adjusted as your receive signal. So if you zero beat that carrier, by definition, zero beating means you're not going to hear anything. So if you offset the zero beat by 300 hertz, you'll hear a 300 hertz signal. Now, if you turn that carrier off and on, you will produce sidebands. And that's why a carrier that's not being turned off and on is different, very different, than a carrier that's being turned off and on. And the faster you turn the carrier off and on, the higher the symbol rate, the higher the bandwidth that's produced. So with carrier frequencies, you have to define it as a constant carrier. A constant carrier carries no information. A non-constant carrier does and has a bandwidth.
Okay, I found something. I'm going to read it. That is the RF bandwidth of typical CW signal. The minimum bandwidth is often assumed to be something like 25 hertz. But with the appropriate frequency stability, one would get the best copy at a bandwidth around 18 hertz for the normal hand key CW. 20 years ago, I was in very active CW EME monobalance, and I always optimized bandwidth for weak stations. That's the end of the quote that I found. But I was always on the assumption 600 hertz, because what we have is A1, which is unmodulated CW. A2, by military standards, is modulated carrier with 100 kilohertz tone on it. And the reason that we can have so great distances on the CW is because it's very narrow. So anybody knows what is the width of CW and 2XGS?
CDH with a comment. Yes, John, I just want to point out that I mentioned earlier, I'm not talking about CW. I'm talking about a constant carrier. Once again, a constant carrier has no information in it and therefore has a very, very minuscule bandwidth. When you start to key the carrier off and on, you are introducing information into that signal, and you are introducing sidebands into that signal. A person sending CW at, say, 5 words a minute is going to have a much more narrow bandwidth transmission than someone who's sending CW at, say, 35 words per minute. So that's what I'm trying to get at. I was talking about a constant, non-changing carrier. So, John, you want to say something?
That's essentially what I wanted to say. Only the eternal sine wave that never got turned on and will never get turned off has infinitesimal bandwidth. As soon as you do anything to it, turn it on, turn it off, modulate it, key it, or do something, you start to take up more spectrum and you generate side frequencies.
So we are keying to DCW, and then we're getting that 600 hertz that I set, or less, and 3GN.
We're thinking in terms of amplitude modulated signal where there's an upper sideband, a lower sideband, and a carrier. For descriptive means, that carrier has a nominal, almost non-existent bandwidth. It has a lot of signal in a very, very narrow, non-informative envelope. And so the information is on the upper sideband, it's on the lower sideband, and the bandwidth is on the upper and the lower. I don't think you add a certain amount of width to the carrier when you're conceiving of the components that an amplitude-modulated signal are made up of. So what's your opinion?
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Thank you, Roy. I have a question, and my original question I'm going to put on hold because of the issues that were raised right now, and it pertains to it. I have always had an easy time visualizing AM as almost a DC level when I look at the carrier, and then you modulate it going up and down. Could you, Roy, give us a quick explanation? And please emphasize on CW, because that seems to be the most mysterious to me. With CW, is there a carrier or is there not a carrier? I seem inclined to believe there's a carrier and then the tone modulates it. There's constantly a carrier. That's why it's called continuous wave. Can you set me straight on this and just give us a brief sort of visualization, if you can, as like I did, on with how AM sideband and CW looked as in comparison, let's say, on an oscilloscope.
Okay, I'll do my best. The way that I perceive these things is that the carrier, the transmitter, puts out a carrier at a frequency determined by the tuning of the oscillator. Now, if you key down and you stay keyed down and you continue to key down, there is no significant bandwidth because there's no information. So if you look on an oscilloscope, you see just one blip on that frequency. Now, where the magic happens is when you start to give it to a person who knows CW. And they turn it off and on and off and on and off and on. These transitions are going to generate sidebands, very much like amplitude modulation. When you speak, it generates sidebands. If you look at an AM signal that's unmodulated, all you have is that very narrow carrier frequency coming out of your transmitter. It's only when you talk that you generate modulations that produce side lobes, an upper sideband and lower sideband. And that's what gave people the bright idea that the upper and the lower sideband were identical in information, and the carrier in the middle was just a reference point and removed most of it and improved the efficiency. But you get sort of the same thing with CW. The faster you key up and down on CW, the wider those sidebands occur with the central carrier frequency as a reference point. So I hope that explains it. If not, please tell me.
Yeah, okay. And I just want to put this out there first. For us guys on Echolink, there's a few people, well, one in particular, that just jumps in with a question, doesn't throw out his call sign, just jumps in, starts asking conversations. And if you could please be more courteous with that so that other people can join in. This is the thing, Roy, with the... I can visualize the carrier being like a DC level, and with amplitude modulation, we are raising and lowering that DC level, rather. And the sidebands, when we talk about sidebands, are we talking about increasing and, are the sidebands an increase and decrease of frequency?
Yes, they're generated mirror images of each other. They're some and different on either side. We call one the upper sideband, we call the other the lower sideband, but yeah, there's some in differences.
Okay, so there's some in differences of the original frequency. So they are actually like frequency deviations, correct?
KD2FIU.
Yes, George recognized. I just want to tell Wes that 95% of that was a microphone problem again. So it's still happening. But George, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. What I'm going to say may not be 100% correct, but I think I want to try and bring this in more of the correct direction. When you work in CW, you are carrier, 100% carrier. And you can beat a tone on there, of 600 hertz, 800 hertz, anywhere in between on what. And there are standards. You don't just indiscriminately do it. There are standards that are pleasant to the ear, to the receiver's ear. When you're working CW, you can work in bandwidth of 250 hertz. Excuse me, 250 hertz up to about 2.2 kilohertz. And once again, not an indiscriminate number in between. There are standards to which operators prefer to get into. Most are around 500 hertz. That's CW. It is a continuous wave. When you're working SSB, you also have your transmitter putting a continuous wave, but you're suppressing it to actually drive the energy to work one of the selected sidebands. Let me let it drop, and then, if you want, by the way, I was busy over here. Roy, I'm going to let it drop, and then we can go back to Rich's original question about why FM on 2 meters.
Okay, yes, Alan.
Yeah, George made a mistake. Those numbers that he gave for the bandwidth are where you want to set the receiver, where you want to set the filter on the receiver. It's not the bandwidth of the transmitted signal. I can work within 100 hertz of a stable signal and not hear them at all.
Roy, can I answer?
Yeah, sure, George. Feel free.
Hi, Alan. Yeah, I wasn't saying that you can do whatever you want. I said it's not an indiscriminate bandwidth that you want to work. It's there are preferences that have been used for a while, and you have it with people who are preferring to receive on a certain level, transmit on a certain level within that. But like I opened up saying, I'm not 100% correct. I'm just trying to bring this into line to what it is. Alan, do you agree with that?
Nope, I don't agree. You're talking about the receiver settings, which has nothing to do with the transmitted signal.
N2XGN, how am I coming now?
There was a little bit of switching at the very beginning, but the second half was fine. I just want to throw out that we kind of went into some strange direction that that wasn't being discussed. There is a big difference between what frequency you like to hear the CW tone at. If you offset the beep frequency, you could have a 300 hertz tone, you can have a 500 hertz tone, you could have a 700 hertz tone. That's just the audio that's being piped into your ears when you're listening to the switch be connect and cut out and connect and cut out. I'm just trying to give people the sense that, you know, physics is one of those things that you can't get away with anything. The bandwidth of even CW is determined by the symbol rate of your transmission of CW. As you speed up your symbol rate, the information that you send, usually with CW it's in terms of words per minute, the bandwidth of that signal will broaden. If you filter that bandwidth to a narrower one, you are going to undermine the signal on the other end. It's a little bit more complicated than amplitude modulation, where you could just do the single sideband thing. But and the bandwidths are nominal. No one sends CW fast enough for a very wide bandwidth. But that's the point I'm trying to get across. That even though CW is not a single sideband type of transmission, there are sidebands that are produced as you increase the rate of your transmission, the symbol rate of your signal. That's what I was trying to get at.
And to extend.
UKW.
Okay, first Wesley, then Alan.
I tend to agree with George. Around 500 hertz, didn't say exactly 500 hertz, around 500, 600 hertz. I said 600 hertz. But I found a piece of literature which says the occupied bandwidth, I'm just quoting, the occupied bandwidth of CW signal is determined almost completely by the shape of rising and falling gauges of the keying function. Then you can see the shape of the spectrum of CW signal, and that is somewhere between 300 hertz up to 1300 hertz, but you can expect 300 hertz in average. And to explain.
Okay, again, I think we're talking apples and oranges. You're talking about receiving filters. I'm talking about just the bandwidth of the transmission. Most CW radios have filters that round the change from off to on. They're not square waves. Square waves will produce all kinds of frequency artifacts that usually people describe as clicking. So I think, again, we're talking different things. I'm talking about the created signal envelope of a operating CW operator versus a complete information list carrier that's going on for infinity. But, Alan, you wanted to say something.
Before that. I was talking about occupied bandwidth, so I wasn't talking about the filter in the receiver. I was talking about occupied bandwidth, and that's one of the articles that I have by W8JI. Quite nice guy, N2XG.
Anyway, Alan, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're right, and you're not right. You're right that the higher the speed of the CW, the greater the bandwidth. That is absolutely correct. But you're ascribing a much greater bandwidth to say a 45 word a minute CW signal. I doubt it's going to be more than 100 hertz wide. And, you know, when you're talking about 500 hertz and 2.2 kilohertz, you're talking about receiver filters. It has absolutely nothing to do with the transmitted signal. This is N2KW.
Yeah, Alan, I didn't quote any of those bandwidths, so I don't know how I could be wrong for something I didn't say.
No, no, George quoted those bandwidths.
Okay, it sounded like I was right, but I was wrong. It's more like I was right and they were wrong.
KD2FIU.
Now, I'll give it to you in a minute. You were right in that the higher the speed, the greater the bandwidth. That is absolutely correct. But I think that everybody is imagining the bandwidth of the CW signal to be greater than it is. It's not.
Okay, I didn't, again, give any number. I didn't say it was big, small, or indifferent. I simply said it was more. So, okay, but, you know, what can I tell you? Anyway, George, what's your response?
The filtering can be installed or is installed by the manufacturer, either in variable bandpass or in older radios, by installing filters for transmit or receive, and both. So I don't know why it's being nailed down to, oh, we cannot transmit or we cannot receive beyond this filtration. It's available on both transmit and receive in various technologies.
So, okay. Again, we kind of fell over to some other strange topic. I'm just saying this. The point of the filtering is more for the background noise and such. The actual bandwidth of your CW at any kind of reasonable rate is going to be much narrower than the bandwidth of the filters that you're going to apply. And for very good reason, that you don't want to touch them because that will impair your signal transmission. So, again, not quite sure why we're disagreeing, because I think we're all in pretty much agreement, but we're all seemingly talking about different things, which is probably the problem.
And keep in mind, this filtration is occurring in the IF stage. Okay? So it's not like it's what you're listening to. That's the frequency. I mentioned that I separated that when I opened my incoming interjection earlier. I separated the frequency that was comfortable for you to listen at and the receiver to hear you at from the bandwidth. Now, the transmit and receive bandwidth is also controlled by the IF stage. There are standards, because you can buy radios that work, and you can work CW at 2.2 kilohertz. You're hardening up the band, no question about it. That's if you have no filtration in the radio for transmit and receive in the IF stages, and or both.
Wow. I have never heard a 2.2 kilohertz signal. I've never heard a 1 kilohertz CW signal.
Mm-hmm.
Are transmitters that do come out with that. There are transceivers that have that, and you got to buy the filters for it. A lot of old transceivers will like that.
That's for the receive IF. It has nothing to do with the transmitter.
Yeah, the quote that I was giving, it says, the occupied bandwidth of CW signal is determined almost completely by the shape of rising and falling edges of the gain function. Isn't that the answer? And to Xian.
That's absolutely correct.
Roy, I think Ed is trying to break in.
Okay, let's give Ed a little opportunity to check in. Yeah, I mean, basically, it's the keying rate and the rise full time of the transmitter. And there are lots of very nice circuits that smooth out the rise and full time and limit the amount of spurious frequency. But, Ed, if you're out there and you're trying to get through with us talking to each other, please hit that push-to-talk button.
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, John.
Thank you, Roy. You know, again, and I'm sorry if I'm sort of holding you back here. I've heard in forums, rather, I've read, that it seems to be CW is much harder on it on a linear amplifier than, let's just say, like sideband, single sideband. And my confusion is that I am under the impression that you are only actually transmitting a carrier on CW when you tap, if you send a dot or a dash. So am I correct with that?
And 2KW?
Yes, Alan.
The hardest duty cycle for an amplifier is radio teletype, because the signal is on for full power for the duration of the transmission. For CW, it's keyed on and off, and it averages less than 50%. And for a single sideband, the duty cycle is about 30%, unless you're running a lot of speech processing. And that's why different modes are more demanding on an amplifier. It's about the duty cycle. Over.
Okay, that's a good explanation.
Yeah, you know,
frequency modulation also has a 100% duty cycle, but you're not going to use it on HF. But yeah, anything that's a 100% duty cycle is going to smack around your finals, and you probably want to lower the amount of power that you're putting out, because in single sideband, the duty cycle is much, much smaller.
Can you relay that, what he said?
It was double.
Yes, indeed. It was double. Alan mentioned that the duty cycle of CW is relatively high. So because the duty cycle is high, it takes it requires a lot more power from the linear amplifier, whereas single sideband, maybe on a good day, you're using, except for the peak, something like 10 or 15%. Of the total amount of current. For CW, where it's off, on, off, on, off, on, the duty cycle is higher, and so the power requirement for that type of long-term transmission. So he was suggesting that that's one of the reasons why linear amplifiers are knocked around more by CW than things like single sideband.
And to exchange. Alan and George, could you comment on Dr. Roy? He said, at least what I understand, you have a CW, but you're still creating upper and lower sideband. Alan, please.
Wesley, you got to understand this is a somewhat directed net. So I'm kind of the guy controlling the pedals. Let me see if I'm reaching you.
I do apologize for that.
It's okay. People, you know, sometimes think that they're just having a chat on the repeater. John, N2ZC, asked a question or made a comment, and I would like to hear his response. Now, he's one of our EchoLink people, so, you know, fast keying on our part doesn't allow him to say anything. So let's all let the repeater rest for a second and give John N2ZC a chance to respond.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Roy. And Leslie, yes, please throw your call sign out there and then wait to be recognized, not just jump in with a question. I mean, we could all do that and then we'd be just all garbled over each other. We'd all wait in line. You know, I understand that now the reason with duty cycle It's another term. It's a jargon which you guys are over my head, and I fully, you know, appreciate that and really, really respect that. But just to ground me, so I have a reference point.